This podcast may contain adult language, adult situations, spoilers, and some brief nudity, so parental guidance is suggested.
We have such sights to show you.
After about 5 minutes of this movie, you're gonna wish you had 10 beers.
And such?
And?
And there are many gifts in the world and many Toms as well, but I... Sancho.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Listen, Walter.
Listen, I made a great reporter out of you, Hildy, but you won't be half as good on any other paper, and you know it. We're a team. That's what we are. You need me, and I need you, and the paper needs
all of Americans.
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Oh, well. La-di-da, la-di-da, la-la, yeah.
Welcome back to the Cinema Recall Podcast.
Hey. Hello, Donnie.
Hello.
How's it going, man?
Oh, it is going.
Well, it's damn good to hear your voice once again.
Likewise, my friend.
It's been a long time. Hey, everyone. We are here for a special, somewhat live, pre-recorded in front of a live audience that has been canned. This is Vern from the Cinema Recall here. Just going to dive into it. This is a special edition episode for our Patreon subscribers. That's right. Pay money, you get wonderful classic episodes like this year. And you get classic guests, like my special guest today, Mr. Donnie Roberts, formerly or still of Cage's Kiss.
Still. We're just waiting for him to pump out more movies.
Okay.
We also have our new podcast going with the old people from Cage's Kiss, and that's Videorama.
Videorama. Yes. Oh, is there going to be like a new place to find Videorama?
There will be. My sister's currently working on that as we speak. It took a bit of doing because we were originally going to go with Theme Warriors. But somebody magically had that name and website, so
she's
got it in the works, and we're going to have that hopefully within the next week or two.
Okay.
But yeah, I think we're actually, there might be a link somewhere on the old Cage's Kiss, but if not, do feel free to revisit all of our old episodes.
So is, like, Cage's Kiss going to be no more? Is it going to stop? I mean, is there
kind of and not, because... our whole point was to cover the entire filmography of Cage.
Okay.
And he has so many more projects still in the pipeline that he's doing. There's about 4 more that haven't been released yet. So we're just going to reunite every time he does a new film and put out a new episode.
Okay. Well, good. Okay.
Yeah. The journey, sadly, is not over
yet. The journey's sadly not over. One of these days, I'm going to try to find a way to get actually Nick Cage on the show.
Oh man.
That would be meta upon meta-ness there. Because just to hear him just talk about any of his features. Because he's got to be the cat that has to be fun with this whole thing.
I mean, he is. And especially knowing that he, as he said himself, he's an analog kind of guy. He's not on social media. He doesn't do any of that stuff. Apparently he's a very fun person that you can find over at Trader Joe's over in Las Vegas, apparently. He frequents there constantly, so...
Oh, very cool.
Keep an eye out, and a microphone.
So I do plan on taking another trip to Vegas, so I'll just make sure that I have a microphone ready at all times, just to have him just give, like, a little shout-out to the Cage's Kiss podcast.
We would be forever in your debt, as we already are.
Fair enough, man. welcome back to the show. Listeners, be sure to check out our past episodes with Donnie. We were talking with him about Prince of Darkness on one early episode. We also talked about the feature Meet the Feebles on another episode. So be sure to go and check out those shows as best you can. But today... Donnie is one of our main Patreon subscribers, and I love you so much, Donnie. He actually gets to pick a topic each month to talk about anything he wants to talk about. So, for listeners, if you're a Patreon subscriber and you join our $10 tier, you can choose any topic of your choosing. Doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't have to be necessarily about movies. We like it to be about movies, but just don't think you have to talk about just movies. Just be about anything. But today, Donnie, your topic and your movie, and I thank you for choosing the movie, was Poltergeist 2.
Poltergeist 2, The Other Side, rated PG-13. Starts Friday, May 23rd.
The sequel to the alleged prequel, which is known as Poltergeist.
Yes.
Why did you pick Poltergeist 2?
It really kind of falls into this category of weirdness that I really enjoy with movies, where at the time when it came out, sequels were still just unheard of. You just didn't really have a lot of films that were as successful as that getting sequels made. And Poltergeist was a movie I remember seeing as my second horror film growing up and just stuck with me. A lot of the visuals in that just have never gone away. And Poltergeist 2 did the exact same thing. It gave me a fear of braces that still stays with me to this day. And I just was surprised how many people wrote it off because they either hadn't seen it or they just had heard from other people that this movie was absolutely horrible, which it kind of is, but it has its reasons, which are very, very weird when you start getting into the backstory, which is why I love the Poltergeist films, because they have their own legacy of crapitude that happens with them that just keeps people arguing back and forth. Like in the first movie, the whole thing was, who was the actual director? Was it Tobe Hooper or was it Steven Spielberg?
Well, no
one
has...
And then with this one, it's the case of what happened.
Well, no one has to worry about the director of this one. This is directed by Brian Gibson. And his filmography, let's see now... He did the Josephine Baker story. Oh, he directed the Tina Turner movie, What's Love Got to Do with It?
Yeah.
Which Tina Turner has a new documentary coming out, so that would be kind of a good double feature, watching both that and her new documentary. And then he did The Juror, and still crazy, and hasn't made a movie since then.
Yes, and he actually... when they made this project, he really wanted to do a horror film, and that's what they sold him. It was, he could do one movie, or he could do a movie that was called Nighttime, and they kept thinking about it. It's like, I really want to do this movie. And like, well, all right. It's like, it's actually factually a Poltergeist sequel. I'm like, oh.
Okay.
It's like, all right, sure. Why not? That's not a big shoe to fill or anything, but yeah, let's go for it.
Well, you know, then you got the, you know, original kind of creators and writers doing the sequel, which is cool. Michael Grass and Mark Victor. Now, Mark Victor will go on to write such classics as the Steven Seagal feature Marked for Death and the Brad Pitt, Kim Basinger feature Cool World.
Yeah. Oh, Hollywood.
That's right. Now, I remember, Donnie, like, the first preview I saw this movie, and it was a quick little teaser. It just showed a close-up of a phone ringing.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you see this old guy walk into this house, and it kind of kept cutting back and forth between this phone and this old guy at the house. And we learn later on that the old guy is Reverend, I'm trying to pronounce his name right now, Henry Kane. Reverend Henry Kane. Played wonderfully by Julian Beck, and he kept just going to the house saying, "Let me in, let me in, you're all gonna die." And then tarot cards, Poltergeist 2, The Other Side, and the line, "They're back," which is never actually used in the movie. I mean, it was a tape line for the posters, and I think they recorded a scene of Heather O'Rourke, you know, the actress who played Carol Ann, just saying the words, "They're back," but that line is, like, actually never in the movie.
No, it was... Original script, it was there, but they were just kind of like, we don't really want to touch back on that.
So, yeah. I'm not quite sure exactly where to sort of begin with the feature. All we know is that, all right, so at the beginning of the movie, there is this Indian shaman who is with this other Indian shaman, and they're releasing these spirits.
Yes.
And that's all I really know. It looks like one of them gets possessed, but then is able to conjure them out for some reason. Then we cut to the Freeland family, who are living in a new home. And I really thought this was, what's her name now? Diane Freeland's. I thought it was her grandma's house.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess it's not. She's just borrowing money from grandma.
Yeah, well, it's not really said in the movie, but it is the grandmother's house.
Okay.
But there, and it kind of makes, well, it would have made sense. A lot of this would have, because the movie originally, this was 130 minutes long.
Oh, or, wow.
I'm sorry, 190 minutes even. But just condensed it down to 97 minutes. And then the studio moved a lot of scenes around. And it would have made a little bit more sense, because they don't even really tell you how much time. Line from Craig T. Nelson, where he said the house has been gone for a year.
Sorry, man, you were breaking up really kind of badly there. Can you just kind of start that sentence over again?
Yeah. Okay. They don't really tell you how long it's been, other than a throwaway line that Craig T. Nelson gives, where he says the house it's been 5 years since the first Poltergeist film, and everyone's obviously aged. And they don't even tell you really either where the older daughter's gone. And that's kind of sad, because in real life she was unfortunately murdered. But in the film, there was actually a line about her going off to college, and that's why she wasn't with the family anymore.
See, I must have been out getting the soda or something like that, because I totally missed that line. I remember.
Well, they cut it out of the film. That's what I was saying.
It's, oh, they did cut out of the film. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
For some reason, they decided to cut it out, and people, when they saw the film at the time, were like, what happened to her? Why isn't she here? And it's like, well, there's two reasons for that.
Yeah, it would have been great to say, you know, hey, he's out the weekend with friends.
Yeah, yeah.
We forgot to mention that another Poltergeist killed her, so she's not going to come around anymore.
Yes, and it's funny what you were mentioning with the Native American shamans in the beginning. They also had subtitles originally for that, for when they were talking to each other, to kind of tell you what was going on, that they were actually preparing the shaman Taylor for going off to help the Freeling family. And part of the whole shuffling of scenes around thing, that's not the original beginning. The beginning of the film was when Taylor is driving through Casa Verde, and he goes to what's now the archaeological dig site of the Freelings' home. And the whole scene with him on the mountain, that was supposed to happen after Kane first comes to the family, and then Taylor arrives at their doorstep.
Okay. All right. So after the session there, then, you know, we do meet the family again, minus the older daughter. And this is the weird thing, too, because now it seems to, because the grandma is getting kind of like, I guess, interested in Carol Ann's psychic abilities. Because it turns out grandma has psychic abilities. And it seems that Diane has also the same psychic abilities, but she wanted to keep it hidden. She wants her kids to have a very normal life. Actually, watching the scene of the grandma and the daughter and even the mom, it kind of reminded me of Hereditary in a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just the way that, you know, the grandma's like sort of like teaching Carol Ann these, you know, supernatural ways and whatnot. And I'm not saying the grandma in this movie is trying to get her daughter to be, or granddaughter to be, a Satanist or any of that matter right there. I found it to be just kind of fascinating. It even the fact when I think, is it Shaman Taylor?
Yeah,
as the shaman right there, he tries to get Diane to embrace her psychic abilities and tell them, you know, not to be fear. You have to be strong as a family. You know, that's how these poltergeists get you. If you're not strong, beat a family. Exactly. And she's just like, well, no, I don't want my kids to have anything to do with this. You know, they shouldn't. Or I think she also sent something too to like, what's the guy's, the other son, Robbie, because Taylor is like drawing these face paints on him. And he actually has this really great line about kids are a lot stronger than what you think they are. You know, like, I know you want to protect your kids, and that's great, but your kids are actually a lot stronger than you give them credit for. And of course, Diane's like, well, no, I'm their mother. I'm just there to protect them and all that stuff. But the shaman's actually pretty wise in saying that, because what he said kind of reminded me a little bit of how one of my friends, you know, raises their kids. And he lives out in Arizona, kind of like out in the middle of nowhere, really. And he just kind of lets his kids kind of go wander around there. You know, they have somewhat of a curfew, but he trusts his kids well enough to know that they'll make good, safe choices, because that's what he taught them to do and told them to use common sense and all that. So I think the shaman, in a way, is just trying to embrace something onto like this white culture that is a little bit hesitant about the Indian creatures. I mean, even the dad, Steve Freeland, played by Craig T. Nelson, he has a little backlash against the Indian shaman, and he thinks that maybe he is the reason why that all these elements are happening, you know?
Yeah.
And then...
Well, right, even Bobby had a scene, too, where he was asking Carol Ann what she's doing, because he thought she was doing this all over again herself, too.
Yeah. You know, because, I mean, it does show a little flashbacks to what happened in the first movie, which is fine, but I kind of wish they didn't put that in here. I kind of hate that when movies do that, because I want this movie to be its own thing. And I like watching sequels of movies that I don't necessarily have to, like, watch flashbacks of the first movie to understand what's going on with this one.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh.
This film, it kind of infamously just retconned a lot of what happened with the first film, because the whole point of the first film was that their house was built on a grave site that they didn't move the bodies, they just moved the headstones. But then they decided, oh, we're going to retcon that, and not only did that happen, but there's also a cavern under their home where a doomsday preacher had a cult stay there and got them stuck down there, and they all suffered and died.
Yeah.
So, like, okay, well, I mean, that makes sense for your Kane character, but it kind of does away with the whole point of the first film.
True. So basically, okay, so I just imagine someone trying to build, like, an Indian burial ground, and they, So a preacher kept a bunch of kids in here and they died, huh? Huh. I had no problem. Let's put a grave right over this.
Yeah.
You sure want to think about this? It'll be fine. What about another 1,000 years they don't have a graveyard? They build this into a residential area. No, they'll be fine. Who actually worries about this stuff anyways? It's all superstitious, all right? Oh.
Yeah, it's perfectly normal to build a graveyard around a cavern full of dead people.
All right. All right, so when the Reverend Henry Kane is introduced, it's at a shopping mall, first of all, and he seems like a spirit, because because he's moving through people and objects, I wasn't quite sure if it's just Carol Ann that can see him and no one else can, but then when the mother approaches, she can see him too. So I'm thinking that maybe he's a spirit that only the family can see and no one else.
It kind of is, but it's and there actually was a scene that the actress Ruby Zeldesign was really upset they removed. And it's her, Kane comes back to the house and
sorry, Donnie, can you take the line back from about Zelda Zubinstein and her part? You kind of broke off right there, man. I'm sorry. Donnie, did I lose you?
Yes, on my side. No, I'm here, dude.
Okay, can you just take the line
back? I'm here.
Can you take that line back from, like, what, Zelda?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just saying that on your side, too, you're kind of cutting it out a little bit, but it's
okay now.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, Ruby Zeldastein was upset because there was a scene that was... She actually gets to confront Reverend Kane. And it's her and Diane were talking to each other about the beast from the first film. And when the Kane comes to the door, he's actually arguing with Tangina. And he ends up saying to her that you will not win this time, that you were able to get the upper hand the last time we got the girl, but it won't happen this time. So it's telling you he is the beast from the first film. And he was the one keeping her safe, telling her she's the light and all that. And it's kind of established, again, through scenes they removed, that he's gained more power the more Carol Ann starts to remember what happened.
Hmm. Okay.
Version. But that's why when he's able to go to the Freelings home, he's able to actually pet the dog and interact with the dog and interact with the screen door and all that when talking to Craig T. Nelson.
Oh.
Because it confused people, too, for the same thing. It's like, well, if this guy, people are going through him, it's like, is he an apparition or not? Because he's also interacting with the real world. You know, even you see Rain collecting on his suit as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, again, it would have made a lot more sense, but they just took a lot of things out, even rearranged a lot of the scenes, which, if you really play film detective watching this, you'll notice that the mom is constantly wearing the same sweater at different intervals through the course of one day. It's...
Oh, wow.
They just kind of took a lot of scenes out of order, like her at the mall and him coming to the house. Like, you were supposed to have had him meet them at the house first and then going to the mall scene later.
So they kind of put these things out of order.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost kind of like what they did with Godfather 3, except not as well.
Okay,
all right. Yeah, a lot of things done, just not with the director saying, yeah, okay, let's do that.
Wow. But, all right. We should also mention, too, that around this time, Grandma dies.
Yes, yeah.
And Carol Ann can talk to her through her phone. But not only that, I guess Diane is having other people, or she's hearing her mom through other people. There's a scene where they're at a diner, and two patrons of the diner come and talk to her. And it's basically the words that her mother says.
Yeah. It's her mom is possessing different people to talk to her.
So right around this time, you know, this is after they leave the diner, they have the somewhat, I wouldn't say confrontation, but they do meet up with that Indian shaman, Taylor.
Yeah.
And this is where Craig T. Nelson's character becomes really admirant about him. But then both him and his wife sees how well that Carol Ann gets along with them. And so they invite him to live at their home. And they see all the wonderful magic that he's able to do. And it seems like everything's going to be nice and safe about this. This is where I mentioned about the... see, I'm going back and forth in the plot just the way the movie does. Mm-hmm. So this way listeners could understand what this movie does. So this is the part where I mentioned where the Indian shaman is painting Robbie's face, and Diane gets really kind of freaked out about that. And also Reverend Kane comes to the home, and he says that Taylor's a bad guy, but it's really clear that Kane's the bad one. And when I first watched this, I really thought that Kane was supposed to be, like, another version of Satan.
Oh, yeah.
But he was just a false prophet who convinced all these kids and other people about Doomsday, you know. And I guess, now, did the whole Heaven's Gate thing happen in the 80s? Or was that...
Yes and no. Heaven's Gate actually started around, I want to say, the mid to late 70s. And it wasn't until late 80s, early 90s that the whole let's drink the punch thing happened with them.
Yeah, so this movie was sort of like predicting stuff that happened in the future and then the past. So I'm pretty sure the screenwriters heard a story about this cult and his leaders saying, hey, it's going to be the end of the world and we're going to hang out here. We're going to drink this juice and we're going to somehow have our spirits be transcended out to other places and whatnot. And very, very crazy stuff. So parts of the family starts to get possessed. Not so much the mom and Carol Ann, so not so much Diane and Carol Ann, but definitely the dad and the son. Oh, yeah. Now, I'm not quite sure exactly how Donnie gets the first hallucination with his braces.
Yeah, that's... I wonder why I get that. I just don't know, other than maybe seeing thousands of wires coming out of the kid's mouth wrapping around him.
Yeah,
Man, that was so creepy and cool.
I'm pretty sure that, when I watch this movie, I know a lot of it's supposed to be hallucinations. Can't see the word right.
Yeah.
Because in the first movie, there's a scene where the guy, starts clawing off his face.
Oh, yeah.
Then I realized, I'm actually clawing my face at all. But in the second one, it seems that these spirits are kind of manifesting themselves more physically, and there could be real actual damage done to these kids, and I just never quite understood it. At least in the first movie, the ghosts were trying doing stuff just as like a call for help.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's again kind of the retconning, but they when they made this film, the director had said that they wanted it to be sort of like the first, but more action oriented, where there was going to be things moving a lot faster. But when the studio watched the cut, they're like, okay, we need more scares. So like, in particular, when Robbie is in the bathroom before the braces, and you see in the mirror suddenly these dead bodies appear, that was something they reshot to make it more like this scary stuff's about to start happening. Same thing with Diana when she opens up the closet and all the bodies come tumbling out of her again. Because they even said there was a scene they were going to have where they had topiary creatures outside, like bunnies and things like that. But they took it out because they were afraid people would say they were ripping off The Shining, because the topiary creatures would start attacking the house and attacking the car as they escaped.
Oh, gosh.
But, yeah, they just decided, let's keep it straightforward. And
I don't think they'd be worried about The Shining. I mean, they'd probably be worried that it's going to look so crazy and cute. Nowadays, I mean, you guys covered Wally's Wonderland. I mean, animatronic. Yeah. Hedge creatures killing people, that's not going to be a big deal. That's going to seem kind of funny. I mean, it would be great if there was like some sort of like psychic battle with like Carol Ann, like raising up off the ground and fighting off all these poltergeists and animatronic hedge stone creatures and brace warriors and whatnot.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of funny, too, you saying that, because the Toby Hooper had said they had an idea pointed out or painted out sort of for a potential sequel. And the sequel is very, very close to Stranger Things, actually.
Really? Okay.
Where they had this idea that scientists and paranormal experts would have done like you saw Taylor found, where they turned the site of the Freeling House into an archaeological site, but they construct a building around it because the flashing light that swallowed the house returns.
Oh.
So they start sending scientists through that light to the other side to see what awaits us in death. And as they're doing so, the light starts gaining more power and souls start coming out to our side. And these actions start drawing Carol Ann back into this, because she's the only one that can, in the end, close the light and close that gap between the worlds. So that was kind of where they were intending to go with it, and they kind of took elements of that and just made their own story from it.
All right. I would totally love to see that version of the movie, because that actually sounds pretty good. But in a way, I'm kind of glad it didn't happen, because if it did, I wouldn't get that first season of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And I actually really liked the first season of Stranger Things very much.
It was a lot of fun.
I think it's a good kind of standalone series. I did not like the other seasons. I think Stranger Things should always been just like one and done season.
Yeah, it should have been very self-contained.
Yeah. But I will say this, though. I do think that a lot of the visual effects of this movie are pretty well done, I gotta say, and I'm trying my best to actually look and see who did the special effects, but there's like a whole bunch. Sorry for cutting this episode short, folks, but if you want to hear the full episode, please go on to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/cinemarecallpod, and just for five measly bucks a month, you can hear this full episode, as well as other bonus episodes not available anywhere else. Once again, it's patreon.com/cinemarecallpod. Don't forget to check out all of our episodes on our website, cinemarecall.net. We're available on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, most other places you can find podcasts. You can check out our stuff on Twitter. We are @cinema_recall. Check out our Facebook group, Crack, Cinema Recall's Awesome Cinematic Club, spelled with a K. You can find that on Facebook. Just search for Cinema Recall Podcast. And thank you once again, and I love you. Goodbye.